Hey, everybody. How you guys doing? Welcome to Pitch Talks. How many of you have been to a Pitch Talks before? No one? You guys don't travel around the country going to Pitch Talk to Pitch Talk? It's international, I'm told. All right. I'll let everybody here introduce themselves real quick rather than me butchering anybody's name. I'm just kidding. But why don't you guys introduce yourselves so everybody knows?
All right. I'm Kate Pruser. I'm the managing editor of Lookout Landing.
I'm Jeff Sullivan. I was the managing editor of Lookout Landing.
I'm Patrick Dubuque, and I was not the managing editor of Lookout Landing.
I'm Meg Rowley. I'm a writer of baseball prospectus. Sucks to be on the end.
I'm going to slide this forward so I can see all these guys at once. I'm Mike Salk. I host the Brock and Salk Show at 710 ESPN Seattle. I'm really honored to be included in all this. I'm just a baseball fan, and these guys live and breathe it every single day. So it's cool to be a part of it. For the most part, you guys are going to handle my job, though, because I'm not being paid well enough to ask a ton of questions. No, I'm just kidding. You guys are going to do most of the work here. We have microphones out there. Is that right?
Yeah.
How does somebody alert a microphone that they have a question? They raise their hand? All right. So when you're ready, like in the next couple of minutes, start raising your hand. Questions for all of these guys. And
can identify where the hand is because we sure
know. Yeah. No, you're all just like a big inky seat.
Right. Yeah, we'll look into the lights and just sort of assume. You guys will handle it out there.
That's awesome. It'll work out.
I promise. It'll totally work out. Let's start here because for the most part, this is a Mariners crowd. And we'll start kind of Mariners specific. We'll branch out and then maybe come back to the Mariners. And Kate, we'll start with you because this season, how is the season going?
Oh, you're starting me with the easy question.
Yeah, is it going well or not?
I mean, it makes me want to throw myself down a well. So. You know, it's been rough. Being able to blame things in a way on the bad, malevolent injury gods has honestly helped me a little bit to shift the pain away. But, you know, when they look bad to begin the season, when they were relatively healthy, I think that that's the fear that's, like, that's what keeps me up at night is, like, when we have this team all healthy, will they look good? Who knows? We haven't really seen them at full strength yet. So, I don't know. It's weird and hard to talk about them, and it's kind of weird and hard to watch them a lot of times, right? But I mean, we're sitting here after a great week, right? We had a really great week. I mean, the image of Mike Zunino showered in sunflower seeds is right. It's like, oh, I pinned it to above my bed, and I
have been so reasonable on the internet.
You really have. Congrats to Meg, everybody. Who is as happy as I was for Mike Zunino, I was also pretty happy for Meg.
Oh, no.
So yeah, that's where we're at. It's weird.
Jeff, you gained any perspective? You're not with the team every day writing about them. What's changed for you?
I don't have to write about this team every day, so now I get to be optimistic. It's a lot better. Everybody's hurt, and we know that everybody's hurt at once. They spent the whole offseason saying, we need to get depth. They got like 10, 11, 12 starters. But the problem is that they needed them all at once. So, of course, the team's going to look like shit when that happens. But they're coming back. Paxton's back. Felix is back in a week and a half, probably. And Haniger's going to be back in a week and a half. They're going to be, like, you know what? There's one other good American League wildcard contender, and it's going to come out of the American League East. But the Blue Jays were bad this year, too, so it's not that bad. Good 4 months of three and a half months of entertaining baseball ahead. And then it's going to be worse.
They got over 100 games left. Does that seem odd that they still have around 100 games left, considering what's already happened this year?
I'm okay with baseball just going forever, just kind of in the background. As long as you don't actually watch all the games, which would be insane. As long as you just kind of mow your yard and... You can't let people like Christian Bergman like too far into your life, but as long
he brings terrible music, don't let him in.
No,
his
see,
new metal.
No, I had no idea, and I'm stronger for not knowing that. But no, as long as you like treat them like the tide or something that needs to happen in order for life to exist, but not necessarily impacting your daily life, then no, that 100 games, 300 games. I mean, next season's basically this season anyway. It'll just be more. So why not?
Can you actually do that?
long as you don't pay attention to the off season, then it all just is the same season.
No, I mean, can you actually not let it into your daily life?
I mean, personally, because
there's no way that's true. It's just not true.
Personally, I have a 3-year-old and 1-year-old, so it's pretty easy. There are days where baseball just doesn't get in because, you know, the kid's teething, and then, you know, it doesn't matter who's starting. But I think for me personally, I am old. I'm older than most of the people of this this genre of writing, and because I watched a lot of early 80s Mariners, there was no hope at that point. It was, I mean, we complain, and you know, it's fine to complain, but if you think back to the Tony Bernazard era of Mariners baseball, there was no one thought that they were going to win. There was no reason.
That was an era?
It was an era. It was like more than 2 days. It felt longer. It really did. So, yeah, in that perspective, in the glacial perspective of things, it's just Mariners. It's always going to be Mariners.
Is there hope?
Well, so this season's been weird to me, primarily because it's been getting used to things we're not used to seeing. So with the exception of James Paxton, and that was a remarkably brief pass you took at him, Jeff. I'm kind of shocked by that. The pitching's been...
We have 30 minutes.
Yeah, the pitching's been really hurt, and so, like, annoying Mariners pitching, still not a thing I'm used to. A good outfield defense, still a thing I'm really not used to. Keep expecting those balls to fall, and then there's Jerod Dyson, and it works out great. Scoring a bunch of runs, that can be fun. Those runs not being enough, also less fun. So I think it's been a season of kind of getting used to things you're not used to as a Mariners fan. They haven't all been fun, though.
Is there hope?
Sure. I mean, there's a shocking amount of parity in the American League. Like, if this was, you know, based on where the standings are in the NL, I think this would be a different conversation. But sure, they're like, what, 2.5 games out of the second wild card? And everyone, they have a zombie rotation. I mean, they could be fine. Anything could happen. They could go on a little run and, you know, 2 weeks from now, we feel very silly. Who knows?
I think feeling silly goes with the territory. If you are writing, talking, analyzing baseball in any way, what's the most silly anyone here has felt while attempting to predict baseball? Jeff?
I picked the Blue Jays to win it all this year, personally. So,
2 years ago at Fangraphs for my job, I wrote a post that was optimistic about Carlos Baguero.
Is that true?
It's there. It's on the internet. You can look it up.
Just being on the internet doesn't make it true anymore.
So, see, there's something that you learn when you get more familiar with the numbers. It's like, oh, Carlos Baguero is swinging a lot less. Maybe he's learning the strike zone. What you could have looked at is, oh, he's just not swinging at everything. So he's just getting called out on strikes every third of it. He was in Japan now?
Yes.
Still.
Yeah. Problem solved. He's good there.
He was good at least once. He hit a home run, like, what, 570 feet or something? It was amazing.
Yeah. Longest home record.
So Jeff's the only one who's felt silly?
I mean, I have a Mike Zunino jersey that I paid to customize, so that's a thing I did. I felt great at the time.
The real question is, how long ago was that?
It was 2014. Everything seemed possible.
Well,
the
that's
framing
fine.
Was beautiful.
I wrote a post earlier this week called Mike Zunino is Unfixable, so.
Well, I mean, Kate, give it a minute.
I have, like, a history of doing this. As soon as I pan someone, they start doing awesomely. Like, Adam Lind was not good, but anyone who attended a game at Safeco with me knows that I rode the hell out of Adam Lind every time he was up to bat, because I hated watching his at-bats, and he would always just hit a home run. It was like he was deliberately just saying, you, Kate.
You didn't go to enough games.
He had like 20 home runs, didn't he?
Yeah, two of them at one game.
See?
I was at against Oakland.
He's punishing you. I would say that of everyone I've met in the game, Adam Lind seemed to care the least about what was going on around him.
I was not prepared for Adam Lind, the person, to actually be awesome and make me feel bad about everything. Like, he loved Seattle. He loved living here. He went to Pride. He went to Uncle Ike's, because I know, because I saw, like, a bag in an Instagram post.
Really smart guy.
Yeah, it quickly was taken down, but once, you know, like a 14-year-old, I made a big deal out of it on the internet. But
well, it is amazing if you watch this game that no matter how well you think you know it, it's always right at that moment where you're convinced and you've waited and you've held off and you've said, I'm not going to go down this road and I'm not going to get burned and it's happened to me before. And just when you finally, you give it 5 or 6 extra games, another week or two after you think it's true, and then you finally come out and say, okay, I think it's true. That's when things always change and go 180 degrees on you. And it is not just a Seattle thing, I think, is the good news in this. And I'll draw on my experience growing up in Boston, and in 2004, I have a good friend named Mike, who's a great guy. I mean, serious Boston accent. I knew him from L.A. And Mike and I used to watch Red Sox games together all the time in Santa Monica, of all places. And I moved out of there in 2004, and it was July or August of 2004, and Mike finally calls me. He says, all right, I'm done. I'm like, what do you mean you're done? He's like, no, I'm seriously done. I'm out. I'm not rooting for this team anymore. I've become an Angels fan. Rex Hudler, I'm going to listen to him every day. Go Angels, you know, John Lackey and K-Rod. Like, I'm all in. It's 04. And I'm like, all right. He's like, so don't call me again, all right? I'm like, yeah, all right. It's fine, dude. And so, sure enough, 2 weeks later, the Red Sox go on that big run. And he came back, as it turns out, much like everyone else does. So let's see if we can go. You want to start here? Oh, am I bringing the mic out? Is that how this works? Oh, you got a mic?
Yeah. Hi, my name's Ryan. I have a question for Jeff and Meg.
How come I can actually see your head from here? Yes. That's unbelievable.
Do either of you have open restraining orders on either James Paxton or Kyle Seager right now?
I told you he was going to fucking do this in front of people.
Yes, yes, I am.
No. Neither in Washington nor the state of North Carolina.
Jeff, do you have open restraining orders?
I support James Paxton. I support him more than his own family probably does. He was clearly... You know what? The thing about James Paxton is even last year, remember when he came back and he had that game against San Diego where he allowed like 9 runs in, two innings? It was a horrible start, but it was a fantastic start because he threw strikes. He was good immediately. He was an ace then. He's an ace now. Best starting pitcher in the American League West? Okay. Yeah. No, you know what? Fuck Dallas Keuchel. He's the best. He's the best in the division.
So the answer was also no.
No.
All right, let's see. We got the mics over here. How'd that go? All right, back here.
Okay, so I don't know if I want to be pessimistic or optimistic, so I'll give you guys the choice.
If you're pessimistic, don't give your name. If you're optimistic, feel free.
Okay, so I think as a longtime Mariner fan, since I was growing up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and my dad was doing business in Seattle, and he bought me a Griffey rookie card. And so there was a time when the Mariners lost all the time, but they had all the best players. And that was fun. We would lose 10-13. And Bobby Ayala would give up 9 runs in the 9th inning. But that was still fun baseball. We had how many Hall of Famers on that team? So I guess the question is, we've got Nelson Cruz, we've got Segura, we've got some legitimate, you know, home runs, legitimate average, legitimate power. We've got Cano, maybe one of the better second basemen. But they're all aging. Do we just blow it all up right now? And just, do we do that? Because I'll give you some other names. Jeff Clement. Remember Paxton was part of the big three? Who are the other two guys? Holtzman.
He's Taiwan Walker.
Taiwan,
yeah.
Was the fourth.
You want to just do Jeff Heverlo, Red Johnson, Ryan Anderson.
Ryan Anderson, yeah.
Jesus Montero.
You want to throw it on the crowd? All right, there you go. That's right. Did you get lost in the rap?
The question is, should we blow it all up now? While there is some value in Segura and Cruz and Cano, and try to trade those guys for prospects? Or should we play it out and kind of do what we've always done in terms of kind of rebuilding but kind of trying to go ahead with trades?
Who wants it?
Well, I'll preface this by saying that it's kind of unfortunate that we're doing this now because it's the beginning of June. And we don't know. I mean, we got basically a month and a half before we even really have to think about it that much. You're 2.5 back. You've got 7 teams to chase. You're going to have to live with this team as it is for the next 6 weeks, and then you can decide what to analyze. But for now, June's kind of, I like June as a month in baseball, because you spend April and March analyzing what the team's going to be like. You spend May trying not to overreact to small sample size. You spend July thinking about who you should trade for and how no one's going to cost anything. And then you get ready for the playoffs. And now there's just nothing to do. You just kind of hope your players go well and that Christian Bergman isn't pitching that much. And so if the question is, what are we going to do 6 weeks from now, I'll let someone else answer that one.
I mean, alternately, you could also say June is a time where you can just kind of sit back and enjoy. Like, you don't have to make those decisions coy yet. And I understand that there's an impatience in certain parts of the fan base where the team hasn't won. It's never won. It's never won even when it was supposed to win, right? So now we're looking at a team that has actual usable pieces in it and yet is failing. I mean, they're under 500. They're failing by definition right now. So it's tempting to think about it. And you're worried that you're going to miss your window for rebuilding. You're going to miss your window to eventually become the Astros. But for me personally, I agree with Patrick that there's still time before we have to make that decision. And a lot of care and thought has been put into assembling this team as it is. There were experiments made with this team. Can we get by on this kind of a rotation with this kind of an outfield defense in Safeco Field? Have we built this team to win there? And I think we just haven't had an opportunity to see it play out.
Something just flatlined?
Yeah. Okay, now we can talk about the Mariners season.
I was about to say, that is the worst.
My note to the writers is that was a little heavy-handed.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right, so let's fast forward ahead. You're right. It's June. You don't need to make that decision yet. It's too early to ask that question. Let's fast forward. It's July 20th. You're a week and a half away from the trade deadline. This team is 8.5 games out of the second wild card. What are you doing?
Well, at that point, you're selling, but I don't know what you're going to sell. You're not going to get anything for Iwakuma. Segura is still probably going to be injured. There's not a whole lot of, like, primo flippable pieces except
Kyle Seager.
For one.
Yeah, Seager. Kyle Seager, James Paxton, Segura if he's healthy. Nelson Cruz probably fetch you something this year that he didn't in the past.
You're not going to have like a sexy rebuild that takes place midseason with this team. It's unlikely unless you start selling Paxton. If you want to do that, then I'm out, so I don't care.
Yeah. So you're out no matter what.
I don't think it's worth it to trade Paxton because you still have to prove that he's healthy. I think you get so much more for him at the end of the season than you do in trade line anyway. But yeah, it really is the Seager question because the Seager is the one is the tipping point. If you're willing to trade Seager, then you're willing to do everything. But
so I'm going to ride the end of that sadness into this part, which is, I mean, a lot of the pieces here are old and they're expensive. So if you're entertaining a rebuild, like that's going to take a minute because you're not getting out from underneath the Cano or Felix contracts. Those guys are going to be Mariners until their grandchildren are around. So your options in terms of what you're trading are pretty limited. And I think that where this administration has tried to sort of make their hay is saying, look, we can do player development in a way that is better and different than what we've had, which candidly, it's like, okay, of course you can, because like, look at what we had before this. But what you're going to probably get in terms of the next great Mariners team isn't going to involve a lot of these guys. It's going to be, you know, can this front office draft well? Can it develop players? Can it find guys who other people have undervalued? And that's going to take a minute. And so if for no other reason than as a fan, it kind of sucks to think about the teardown for a long time, I'd maybe encourage people to like be optimistic while you can, because when we get into the like tanking rebuild period, that takes a while, and that's going to be some rough baseball to watch, even if at the end of it we come out with a much better Mariners team. That's what you get for suggesting that they trade Kyle Seager. Divish is in the green room. He can't touch me now.
Who's next? Back here. We'll come up here next.
Hi, I'm Logan. So this might actually come from...
Logan, this is not a support group for Mariners fans.
I'm Logan, and I've been a Mariners fan for 13 years. This may have actually come from one of you, but as we all know, this past offseason, the Mariners traded for Gene Segura, Mitch Haniger, and a witch's curse that prevents them both from playing at the same time. We're all statistically minded people. And I think a lot of the way that we perceive baseball is about sort of facts and figures. What's something that in your baseball fandom you've been like, I know that's not math. I know there is no witch's curse, but damn it, I believe this is real.
Wouldn't it, in our case, usually be the opposite of I believe? Like being, the thing that made me irrationally convinced of something was Dustin Ackley, and I thought he was cursed immediately because of Jeremy Reed. And that didn't make any sense until it made all the fucking sense in the world. It was ruined. So that was the opposite of an answer to your question.
I've got a really nerdy one. This is going to be pathetic. But I've never understood catcher indifference. I think I've had it explained to me like 6 or 8 times because I feel like they should throw every time, and it bothers the hell out of me that they don't do it. I know the second baseman should be covering second base and not running the bag, but it's an out. If you get the out, then the game's over. If it's, you know, it's 2 outs and they're up by 3 runs, I just go catch the ball. I know you're not supposed to, but I'll never buy it. I'll 2 years from now, I'll bug somebody on GChat and make them go through it all again. They should just try and get every out. Sorry.
Go ahead.
This will piggyback off the Zunino hot week or whatever we're going to call what's happening at this moment. Whether it's Zunino or whoever it is, like, small sample size, like, at what point do you, whenever you're evaluating something, at what point do you know, like, okay, now I'm not just buying myself 5 or 6 more games. This is actually the right amount of time to evaluate something, whether it's Zunino. Like, is there like an X marks the spot? Like, okay, now I can actually judge.
When does small sample size go away? What's a big sample size? What's a significant sample size?
Oh, so it's a Fangraphs question?
Okay. Come on, Fangraphs. When's a real sample size?
Well, okay, so with Zunino, it... God.
You can pick someone else.
Give me a number.
No,
I'm not going to
do that. That's not how it works.
It depends on the stat.
It depends on the stat. Yeah. Thanks. We can do this other words if you want to alternate. Okay, I would think, just as like a rule of thumb for a hitter, give it like 2 months. But with Zunino, if he's like, I don't know what his walk rate is right now in the past week. I don't know if he's done it yet. I'm looking at you because you would know better than anyone.
He's hitting a lot. He's not walking, he's but he doesn't have to. He's
hitting like, a bunch
of hits the ball.
If Zunino had like a month and a half or 2 months where he strikes out a quarter of the time instead of like a third of the time, that feels pretty meaningful. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be true, but you know, a week means nothing. It means absolutely nothing what happens over a week. Taylor Monter has a really good few weeks, and then Taylor Monter hit a grand slam the other day, though. Barely hit it. But I would think 2 months is like the bare minimum. With pitchers, it's a little bit different. That gets into something that, like, James Paxton was good almost immediately when he came back. But pitchers are different because hitters are reactive and pitchers are, what's not reactive?
Proactive.
Pitchers are proactive. Hitters are reactive, so it takes longer. But at least, like, 2 months, which is why Aaron Judge looks like he's an MVP.
So, yeah, the quick answer, I mean, I think Russell Carlton of Baseball Prospectus has a guide to when every stat not becomes proven but becomes more likely to be true than the alternative, because you can never be certain. You just basically go from being 25% certain to 50% certain to 75%. It goes very quickly for plate control stuff and much less quickly for actual hitting production. I think I don't remember what launch angle and escape velocity. Are they quick or are they slow?
They're quick.
Okay. Yeah, they are quick, right? They're like fast. Okay. So there you go.
Oh, yes, it's everything. Let me take that. It's not everything. The opposite of what I just said, but it's very
also,
important.
Is it exit velocity?
Let's say, I don't know, who's...
Yonder Alonso.
Tyler O'Neill comes up. If Tyler O'Neill hits one ball 115 miles per hour, you can tell right there that is a very strong hitter, and that's information we haven't had forever. That's like Aaron Judge territory, Giancarlo Stanton territory, so you absolutely need hard hitters because the alternative is they better play defense like Jerod Dyson.
Is this where your Carlos Peguero thing comes in?
He hits the ball so hard.
My question is very brief, but does second place matter, really?
What do you mean? Are you including the wild card in that?
Well, I mean, for wild card, you're going to look at all the big hitting teams in the AL East being, what, Yankees, Orioles and Blue Jays, even if the Mariners somehow hit their way into second place, which they very well could do, because Texas and et cetera is garbage. But does it really matter? Because, I mean, realistically, even if the team is scrappy and can make it into second place in the AL West, how is that going to compete with the AL East at the end of the year?
I think that this comes back to a question that we've posed a couple of times on the Lookout Landing podcast, which is, how do you define success? What is success? And we polled everybody at the beginning of the year and talked about, like, does this team have to make the playoffs for it to be a success, or for you to consider the season a success? I think people have different reactions to that, but personally, I don't feel like a playoff appearance is necessary to have a successful season, which I understand is frustrating for a lot of people, because as I said, the team's lost a lot. But for me, just feeling like we're moving in the right direction, like we're putting together something with momentum, something with where adversity strikes.
Is that possible with this team this year, with their age?
I think that we have this year and next year, and after that, it gets really ugly. I mean, I was a big...
Did you say that last year? Seriously, I'm not being a jerk. Did you say that? Because I did. I said that last year.
No, I did, and I looked at all the off-season moves, and I thought that they were pretty smart. And we've seen a lot of those blow up just because guys have gotten hurt and guys haven't performed as they had. I didn't mind the Giovanni Gallardo move. I'll wear that one. There have been times where he's looked okay, all right? I mean, not great, but he's looked...
No, there haven't.
The facial hair is way better now.
That's true. He's looked handsome at times. You know, he looks... God, he looks so miserable out there. He looks like he doesn't want to be there, you know? He does not bother to cover up the gray in his beard. He's like, I'm old, I'm tired. That game where it was raining on him, you could just see he was like, fuck this. Get me off this mound. So that's been painful to watch. But yeah, I think I was not a big believer that Cruz was going to have a big decline, because I think that he has rebuilt his body into being a... Yeah? All right. You want to talk about that?
Oh, no, he has. Yeah.
What are we laughing about?
Sometimes PEDs last a while.
I'm going to give Iron Glenn your name, and he's going to show up at your door.
And then Jeff's going to get hurt.
But no, I mean, I think we have one more year, and then we have hard questions to face. But I think you can make it one more year on what we've got. But also, I won't consider this season a failure if they don't make the playoffs. But that's just me. Your mileage may vary.
Are you guys having fun watching baseball?
Well, I watch a lot of teams. So, sorry, I don't just watch the Mariners, so I'm having a great time. I love watching baseball. I mean, like, baseball's great. Even when it sucks, it's the best. So, like, you know, there are a lot worse ways to spend your summer evenings than watching baseball. And sometimes this team even is really fun.
Well, let me turn the question a little bit, because I was talking to Dave Cameron about this earlier, and he was saying that there haven't been any huge advances in the way we're looking at baseball in the last 15 or 20 years, in his view. And he was saying that, and I'll let him come out and explain it when his panel is later, but essentially saying, look, we made some huge strides in the stats community, and I'm not including myself necessarily in that group. I'm more of a stats observer. But he was saying that he and other people in the stats community made big strides, and now what's next? What's the next step in it? And my comment back was to make it fun. Because one thing I've noticed is that the closer we get to determining the best ways to win, not just in baseball but in all sports, figuring out the best way to win is not always conducive and, in fact, usually inversely proportionate to figuring out the most boring way or the most exciting way to play baseball or football or any other sport. How are we going to make baseball more fun?
Are you trying to say make baseball fun again? Is that where you're going with this?
I'm in Capitol Hill. No. I want to escape with my life. Are you crazy?
There was a moment where that was funny from Bryce Harper.
Right.
We don't have to get into that. But anyway. I mean, baseball... So I think that part of the tension in baseball is not around stats versus not, because, like, stats have won. Sabermetrics won. That war is over. We're tinkering and getting more precise. And that's great. But like the tension now is around letting baseball sort of breathe in a way that isn't so restrictive. And I think that for a lot of fans, especially as we're seeing a generational shift, that means letting baseball players be themselves. It means letting them have fun. It means letting Taylor Motter flip his hair when he hits a home run, right? Like, that stuff is fun, and fans like to see it. And when it's genuine and authentic to the player instead of what can, you know, MLB put in a GIF and, like, tweet out from Cut 4, no disrespect to them, they have a job to do. But, like, when it's an authentic thing that fans get to interact with, that's a lot of fun. And you, you know, lay that over a game that is already great that we all like, and that's a really entertaining product. And players have never been better than they are right now. Like, we are watching amazing baseball happen right now. We get to watch, I mean, not right at this minute, but we get to watch Mike Trout. So many people, right, sure. So many people, like, you know, died 100 years ago. They never got to see Mike Trout, but we get to. So it's there for us, and we just have to let it breathe a little bit.
I think one of the great things about baseball is, as much as we've been taught since birth that it's perfect and that, you know, the diamond was shaped in just this perfect, ideal way, we can change it, and we can do it whenever we want, really. Whenever it starts to get less fun or less interesting, then we can just kind of adjust it. And I think we are heading that way right now, not because of statistics necessarily, although I think StatCast and some of the other factors have taught players how to play differently. We just have three outcomes now. We're getting towards the point where it's going to be a home run, or it's going to be a walk, or it's going to be a strikeout. And there are, you know, that's, to me, a less aesthetically pleasing brand of baseball. It's certainly a better way to maximize winning, which is why people are doing it. But we can always change it. A rule that I would love to see changed in baseball that my friend Brendan Glowski raised is that we just shrink the gloves. And then by doing that, there's no reason that gloves have to be the shape they are or the size they are. So make them smaller, and then every time a ball is put into play, it's more likely to be a hit. It rewards people who hit ground balls more often. People stop trying to hit everything 45 degrees into the air. It's not 45, it's 30, but whatever. And then you have a more interesting game. What you don't want in baseball, no matter what, whether it's stats or whether it's because of training, is a dominant strategy. You don't want one type of way of winning. And we had that little flicker of hope with the Royals, and they're gone now. But we kind of, you know, as long as we can, the people, and they're always too slow to react, but eventually we will somehow fix what's going on right now, and baseball will be a little bit more interesting then. And in the meantime, like Meg said, we've got personalities now, which is good.
Are you going to replace Dave Cameron after MLB comes and drags him off to StatCast re-education camp?
Me? Like, I don't have to replace him. It's not my job. I don't work at Fangraphs.
Someone's promotion.
This works out great for Jeff. Jeff's been trying to usher him there for the last few years. All right, one more question. We have one in the back, I saw.
Yeah, actually, right over here. Thanks. Actually, you guys have led into this topic already, so thanks for stealing my thunder, Mike, for opening that up.
Yeah, I do that all the
appreciate
time.
Appreciate it. Just to follow on with this, I was going to talk about the development of the three true outcomes baseball and how it is a bit less pleasing to some players and fans, especially. What do you guys think of, other than smaller gloves, might be a competitive balance or, I mean, just through natural play or likely rules changes that might lead us back into more of a focus on OBP, small ball, anything like that that would take us back away from three true outcomes?
Okay, I got one more. There's a rule that I've always wanted to abolish, that fielders can't throw their gloves. If you throw your glove and it hits a ball, it's a three-base penalty, which is basically a home run. And if you knock down a home run that's going over the wall, it is a home run. That's dumb. I think we should have people throwing gloves. I would love to see... Admit it. You see the ball... In normal baseball right now, somebody hits the ball and it's going out and the fielders don't move and it's done. The moment's over. But if you had that extra moment of the extra suspense as that fielder just hucks his glove in the air... We have enough home runs. We can spare a few. Let's have this. And then
I feel this is a career renaissance for Fernando Rodney.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing, is that there'd be one guy who was really good at it. He'd have this skill, and that would be Mike Trout. At least it'd be one way to appreciate Mike Trout before he ran out of them.
I don't know if we're going to top that, so I think you guys have acquitted yourself quite nicely. Thank you very much for our first panel. Any final words from anybody? All right,
James
perfect.
James Paxton is better than Chris Sale.